sahana vavatu, sahanau bhunaktu, sahavidyan karavavahai, tejasvi navadhitamastu ma vidvishavahai. Om shanti 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 hi, chaitanyam sarvagam sarvam, sarvabhuta guhashayam, yat sarva vishayatitam, tasmai sarva vide namaha. Om. Good. Nice to see you all. Welcome also to the many students regularly attending these classes online. We continue. We just started last week our study of chapter 17 called Samyak Mati, Proper Thinking, Correct Thinking. And we noticed that this chapter unusually started with three prayer verses. So that really calls attention to this chapter as being unusual. We haven't seen a chapter beginning with prayer verses since chapter 1, which was a long time ago. The next chapter also has some prayer verses. We'll see that obviously when we include this. We don't know if this might have been an independent text at one point, but we do know that it is special for the inclusion of these prayer verses. Immediately after the prayers, we came to this verse, which began, Atma labhat para nanyaha labhaha. There is na paraha labhaha. There is no greater achievement in life, atma labhat, compared to the acquisition of atma. And I said that we wouldn't discuss the reasons why, because the next whole series of verses explain that. So we took it as a proposition. And now we have to, in today's class, we answer the question, why is it that Shankaracharya claims that there is no greater acquisition in the world other than Atma, nothing greater than Atma? And we began this fifth verse, but we didn't complete it. So we'll start there today. And we see the answer to that proposition. Atmartho pihiyo labaha, Atmartho pihiyo labaha, Sukha yeshto viparyayaha, Sukha yeshto viparyayaha, Atma labha para prokto, Atma labha para prokto, nityatvad brahma vedibhi, nityatvad brahma vedibhi. Atma artaha api hi, that he is because. So why is it that there's nothing greater than the acquisition of atma? We saw this first half. Yaha labaha, anything that is obtained, atma artha, for the sake of oneself, for the sake of happiness, pleasure, contentment, peace. Anything you obtain, sukhaya, for the sake of happiness, ishtaha, anything desirable that you attain. Take it a little different. Anything which is ishta, anything which is desirable, is obtained, why? Sukhaya, atmartaha, for one's own sake, sukhaya, for the sake of one's own happiness. And this is such an obvious observation of human behavior. What is it that drives all human behavior? In fact, not just human behavior, the behavior of all living critters. I given the example before of an amoeba on a slide underneath a microscope. You put sugar, a little drop of sugar water in one quarter of the slide, and that amoeba starts going in that direction. You put some vinegar in the other corner, you put some vinegar there instead of the sugar, and the amoeba runs away. just like you and I, like people, run towards things which are desirable and run away from that which is undesirable. Well, that makes us, as human beings, about as smart as an amoeba. At that level. It's true. By the way, that means if all of your actions are driven by raga and dvesha alone, you are behaving exactly like an amoeba, correct? Fortunately, human beings can discern dharma. Amoebas, not so good. So we can discern what is dharma and go and resist raga dvesha and follow dharma instead. So that's what sets us, thank goodness, sets us apart from those amoebas. Now the point we saw in this verse, and the important part, is that anything that is sought, sukhaya, for the sake of one's happiness, ends up being viparyaya. Some of you would say ulta, backwards, opposite. And that's so for several reasons. The main reason we discussed in the last class, and that is whatever you obtain doesn't last forever. Some kinds of happiness you obtain last a very brief period of time. You enjoy a meal, how long does that enjoyment last? You know, for a while. Anything you obtain eventually loses its ability to please you. Correct? I'll say that again. It's so important. Anything you obtain in life can please you at the beginning. Eventually it loses its ability to please you. I'm smiling. I just remembered a hilarious verse of Bhartrahari. He writes this Vairagya Shatakam. There's 100 verses on Vairagya. And he talks about this happiness of eating food. And he says the first half of our lives, we eat food. Second half of our life, food eats us. I'm not sure exactly what he means by that, but we get the sense quite clearly. Okay. But it's true. Anything you obtain for the sake of happiness gives you happiness for a while. Absolutely. And thank goodness. That's wonderful. We can enjoy the many gifts God has given us. But eventually that happiness wears off. We become satiated. Whatever you get the fancy new gadget and then it malfunctions. Becomes a source of headaches. Some of you have bought a new car and had lots of problems with it. So that wonderful new car becomes a source of headaches. This happens a lot. There are other reasons. So this is a main reason we talked about yesterday. Anything that you obtain eventually no longer becomes. You obtain it for the sake of happiness, but eventually it becomes the opposite. And the clearest example of being opposite is that when that object ceases to give you happiness for whatever reason, you feel a sense of loss. Thinking for the parents here, you have the birth of a child, how wonderful is it? And then 20 years later, gone. And you feel a sense of loss, I presume. Parents will feel, even though the child isn't really lost, but you still feel that. So there are some additional reasons that whatever you obtain in life brings with it the opposite. You obtain it for the sake of happiness, but it comes along with some headaches, so to speak. And what I'm referring to is the fact that to obtain anything takes effort. Sometimes a lot of effort. Sometimes a lot of cost. And cost is effort, right? You have to work for the money. So you know, the fact that you have to pay a lot of money for something indicates that it took a lot of effort on your part to earn that money. Well, almost everyone I know complains, oh, I'm so tired. Why are we so tired? so much effort because we are habituated, we as a culture, are habituated to a very high standard of enjoyment. You know, an interesting contrast. I remember my very first visit to India in the late 1980s, traveling in South India, Tamil Nadu, in an area of villages. I just, for fun, I walked into one of these little villages, so just some huts, clay walls, and thatched ceilings, and people look so relaxed. I think the harvest must have been complete. So they were just so relaxed, happy. They see this strange-looking white fellow. I was wearing blue jeans and T-shirts in those days. So they see this strange-looking fellow, invite him in. But so simple, so relaxed. For them, the point I'm making is the bar of happiness, the expectation for happiness, is much lower. So they don't work as hard. They work, certainly, to plant the fields and, you know, all paddy fields in those areas. You know, to plant and maintain those fields takes a lot of work, but not year-round. What do they do the rest of the year? There's a planting season, and there's a replanting season, because I think they plant in small ponds and then they transplant to big patches, and then there's a harvest. So that's at several months out of the year. What do they do the rest of the year? Now you say, oh, they must get so bored. That's another invention that we've created. We've gotten used to such a high level of stimulation that we're always craving more and more and more and more. So the point we're making here is that for the sake of all the things we enjoy, there's a lot of effort involved. And we have very high expectations, so we work a lot. And the people who are most successful often work more than anyone else. This Elon Musk, how much does he work a day? I think he proudly says he works 12 hours, 15 hours a day. When he's not, basically when he's not sleeping, he's working. That's his life. So how do you get successful? Okay, effort. So this is the second major, is there a third one? Effort. Yeah, this is the other one. So with every gain, first of all, what we're gaining is impermanent, and secondly, there's a big price to pay in terms of effort for all those acquisitions. So in that sense, viparyayaha, our acquisitions lead to the opposite. Then we'll continue. Atmalabha paraha proktaha. But the acquisition of atma, atmalabha, gaining atma, paraha proktaha, is called the supreme attainment, the highest attainment, the best attainment. Why? Because proktaha vedibhihi, because it is described by the enlightened ones, the one brahma vedibhihi, by the ones who have discovered Brahman, by the enlightened ones, the attainment of atma is called the highest. Why? One word, nityatvat. Because it is eternal. Now, when we use this word eternal, there's a lack of clarity. You know, we get used to using English words without really thinking about the meaning. Nitya in Sanskrit. My guru used to joke. We think that nitya, eternal, is like, the example he would give is, he says it's like styrofoam. You put it in the landfill, and hundreds of years later, it's still there. Styrofoam was his example. So our idea of eternal is that which lives a long time, that which exists a long time, or possibly that which exists without end. It's only half of eternal. If you have a timeline, we're in the middle of that timeline. here's time going forward. So if eternal means infinite in this direction, eternal also means infinite in this direction. A better word would actually be timeless to capture what we're after here. Eternal means no beginning and no end. Usually we only think about the second half, no end. No beginning and no end. And we've discussed this logic here several times before. Anything that has a beginning has an end. The only thing that can have no end is that which never had a beginning. And if we apply that logic to any other worldly gain, any other worldly gain has a beginning. Your child has a birth date. There's a day that you bought the car. Anything that you enjoy has a starting point in time. Therefore, is subject to an end. The only source of contentment and peace and happiness, what's called here the paraha labha, the greatest attainment, can only be that which has no beginning. Now, if you think about that, it may sound strange. Wait a minute. How can it not have a beginning? Well, that's exactly what our discussion leads us to. Swayam labha swabhava twal. Swayam labha swabhava twal. Labhastasyana chanyataha. Labhastasyana chanyataha. Anya pekshastu yo labaha. Anya pekshastu yo labaha. Sonya drishti samudbhavaha. Sonya drishti samudbhavaha. Certainly, second line. Tasya labaha. Nacha anyataha. Tasya, of that atma. It's labha. The gain of labha is na anyataha. It is not gained through some kind of means, some kind of method, some kind of effort. Well, that already solves one problem we talked about before. We said there are two problems to worldly gains. One is they're impermanent. Second, they require effort. Actually, let's if we see the second line, we'll fill up the meaning better. So he says, swayam labha. It is the labha, the acquisition of swayam, of your own true self. Swabhava twat. Swabhava twat, because it is your own nature. I'll paraphrase this. This is the one acquisition which you don't make through any other means, because it is the acquisition of who you already are. It is the technical term for this is praptasya praptihi. Praptihi, the acquisition of praptasya, of what you already have. And the tenth man story is a very elaborate way of telling it. I won't use that. But the brief story is the lady who lost her necklace. And she's looking all over the house for her necklace. She's looking outside for her necklace. She can't find her necklace. Till somebody says, look, it's around your neck. And she gains what she already has. Now, her prior effort was useless. But when somebody said, it's already on your neck, and she touched it, that's not really effort, right? How much effort to touch your necklace? So effortlessly, she discovered what she wanted, what she was looking for, without effort. So that's one thing we said. Worldly acquisitions have two problems. One is they require effort. Second is whatever you get goes away, but she's not getting the necklace. She's always had it. So it's not a new acquisition. If it's a new acquisition, it goes away. It's not a new acquisition, it's always there. Of course, here, we know that a necklace is something you can actually lose. But here we're talking about swabhava, swayam, your true nature, swabhava, your essential nature as consciousness. Your true nature as consciousness is a topic we've talked about again and again and again, so we need not go further into it. Remember, consciousness is not a concept or an idea. Consciousness is that by which you know what's happening right now, present in your experience right now. When did you gain consciousness? And here, be careful, because the medical community uses the word consciousness in a very different way than we do. The patient regained consciousness. The patient lost consciousness. Their definition of consciousness is the ability to respond to the environment. They actually have a scale that describes the ability, different levels of the ability to respond. That's their definition. It's meaningful in that context. Just please don't confuse the two. Our definition of consciousness is not something you can gain and lose. We've discussed in prior classes again. We're not going to go through all of this again. But that consciousness isn't lost in dreamless sleep. That consciousness was present before your birth. Don't think that you gained consciousness when you were born. That consciousness meets this definition of eternal. So remember our timeline? So here we are on the timeline. Consciousness is eternal, meaning going forward in time, it has no end. Going backwards in time, it had no beginning. And as we said, these two go together. No beginning, no end. That Atma is nitya, therefore it is your Sarupa, your essential nature, the consciousness, which is the most fundamental truth of who you are, is unborn, uncreated, and unending. And it is attained na anyataha. It is not obtained. Did the lady obtain the necklace? You can't obtain what you already have. So she didn't obtain it. Then what? We could say, in using positive language, she discovered it. Using negative language, next verse, not this verse. Using negative language, we could say that her ignorance of its presence, continued presence around her neck, was destroyed. So in a positive sense, we could say she discovered it. In a negative sense, we could say her ignorance of its presence was destroyed. We can say the same thing about Atmalabha. We can say you discover it. Of course, it's already present, but you don't know its true nature. But you can discover that true nature, or in a negative sense, we can remove ignorance about that Atma. Anya apekshaha tu yo labaha. Now we're getting the other side. Not the acquisition of Atma, but the acquisition of apparent sources of worldly happiness. Notice I had to stick that word apparent in there. Because we think they're sources of happiness. And it turns out, viparyaya, it turns out they're not always sources of happiness. So what about those things? Yaha labaha, second half, two. But those other acquisitions in life are anya apekshaha. They depend on something else. They depend on effort, as we discussed before. They depend on some means, and here's already a problem. If you don't put in the effort, you don't get anything, so there's a problem. Secondly, if the means isn't available, you don't get anything. You want to buy a new car and you can't afford it, then there's a problem. And now we turn in the last line here to the bigger topic, and Shankara says it in an unusually powerful way, a way that I haven't seen, I don't think, in any other text. He says those other apparent sources of happiness are things with saha. Such a thing is anya drishti samudbhavaha. It is born, samudbhava, of anya drishti. Drishti, seeing. Seeing something as anya, separate. Separate from you. And in a simple sense, the lady assumed that the necklace was, she had anya drishti with regard to her necklace. She thought it was out there someplace. That's what anya drishti means. So she thought it was out there, anya drishti, and I've translated it here as duality, and it's an accurate translation, but only if it needs to be understood properly. There's a duality between anya drishti and swadrishti. Anya drishti means the conclusion, it's out there. That's a second necklace, right? There's one necklace around her neck. There's another necklace out there someplace that she's assumed to be out there. That's a kind of duality. This is not a philosophical duality. Often we use this term non-duality in a very profound philosophical way. Here we're talking about it in a very practical way. So anya drishti means to conclude there's another necklace out there which I have to find, which is anya, other than the one that's hanging around her neck. This is anya drishti. So due to this anya drishti, she seeks her necklace, and due to anya drishti, we seek worldly pleasures. And this is another topic we've discussed many times. I'll put it very briefly. You know very well that the true source of contentment is within. And the example you've heard me give at least more than a couple of times is you eat ice cream and enjoy it. Is enjoyment an ingredient in the ice cream? How obvious it is that the source of our happiness in eating ice cream or whatever is your favorite sweet, the true source of that contentment and enjoyment we experience is coming from inside of us. We know that intuitively. Everyone says happiness lies within. And then they spend their entire lives looking for happiness where? What is that? Well, Shankara has a word for it. Anya drishti. The failure to recognize the true source of contentment within, the wrong conclusion that things outside can provide you with happiness, and to conclude then and to pursue then those external apparent sources of happiness. Shankara calls this anya drishti. And as far as I can remember, I've not seen that expression before. I like it very well. Anya, in fact, we can even put another meaning on it. Anya means other than oneself. The meaning is also correct for that. To see the source of contentment, happiness, peace, love, joy, whatever you call it, to see it as being anya, other than yourself, other than within, which is pretty much the same as this necklace example. She had anya drishti with regard to the necklace. Most people have anya drishti with regard to life. The amoeba has anya drishti, right? Ooh, sugar water. And he goes cruising up towards that corner of the slide. That's Anya Drishti. An amoeba has no choice. We have a choice. Okay. So, Shankara explains this Anya Drishti more in the next verse. Anya drishtistva vidya syat, anya drishtistva vidya syat, tannasho moksha uchyate, tannasho moksha uchyate, jnane naiva tu sopi syat, jnane naiva tu sopi syat, virodhit Tvatna karmana, virodhit tvatna karmana. Anya drishtihi tu, breaking the words apart, avidya syat. Where does this anya drishti come from? The lady didn't recognize her necklace around her neck. Why? Avidya syat. It's due to ignorance. Her ignorance of the already sorry for the complicated language, but it's important. Because of her non-recognition of the already existent presence of her necklace. The words are complicated, but they're all important. Because of her non-recognition, ignorance, of the already existent presence, it's already there. She then had Anya Drishti, the necklace is outside. In the same way, because of a person's non-recognition, Pujaswami Dayananda used that word quite a bit, due to ignorance, of course. But ignorance is so, ignorance becomes an abstraction for many people, which is why he used that word non-recognition frequently, and it really makes it very clear. Due to our non-recognition of the true source of contentment within, that due to that particular kind of ignorance, a kind of ignorance which is said to cover the true self like a veil. And remember, we've talked about this veil metaphor. To get the veil metaphor properly, the veil that covers a lady's face in parts of India, that veil is semi-transparent. You see the outline of her face, but you don't see her features. In the same way, the so-called veil of ignorance covers Atma like the veil covering her face. You know that you're conscious. Like you see the lady, you see the outline of her face, you know that you're conscious. But like you don't see the details of her features, you don't know the true nature of your consciousness. This is very something, again, when we use that word ignorance, it fails to capture the subtlety of the situation. If ignorance covers something completely, how about you're walking down that alley and it is pitch black? You don't see a rope, you don't see a snake, you don't see anything. In fact, you trip over the rope because you don't see it. For that rope-snake metaphor to work, the rope is partially obscured by the semi-darkness. This is why that veil metaphor is important to understand properly. It's not that Atma is completely unknown to you. Atma is present in your experience right now as consciousness. How can that be unknown? But the full true nature of consciousness remains to be discovered. That aspect of consciousness is covered by the so-called veil of ignorance. So, vidyasyat, due to this so-called veil. Notice I keep calling it so-called veil of ignorance. Don't think that inside there's some kind of veil. Anyway, it's a metaphor, nothing more than a metaphor, ignorance. So because of that ignorance, there is anyadrishtihi. And obviously, tannashaha, when you destroy that so-called veil of ignorance, that is moksha uchyate. That is moksha, liberation. Liberation from a life of struggle and suffering. This anyadrishti leads you to conclude that there are things out there that you need to get for the sake of your happiness. There are things out there that you need to avoid for the sake of your happiness. So your entire life, like the amoeba, your entire life becomes a struggle to get what you want and to avoid what you don't want. And the struggle goes on until your dying day. It is a lifelong struggle. How to become free from that struggle? Tannashaha. When the ignorance which causes that anyadrishti is destroyed, when you no longer worry about the stuff out there, if I don't get that, you'll say, TK. And if I can't avoid that, if I can't get that, and if I can't avoid that, you would say, AB, TK. That's also okay. This is okay, that's okay. Sub TK, everything is okay as it is. Because your consciousness can't be affected by any of that. Your consciousness, which is your true nature, is already your essence. It is already full and complete, unborn, uncreated. We call it the inner divinity, after all. That inner divinity is an already existent fact, and when you discover it, who cares about all this other stuff? Doesn't mean you ignore it. You have a pragmatic attitude. Whatever needs to be gained, you take care of it. Whatever needs to be avoided, you do it. But not driven by raga and dvesha. You do things because they need to be done, not because you have to. Oh, I have to do this. How often do people use that language? I have to do this. As if the world depends on doing what you have to do. So, moksha, liberation, enlightenment. Interesting to use this language. Moksha is nothing more than the destruction of that so-called veil of ignorance, which partially obscures your true nature. Moksha is nothing more than that. Moksha is also nothing less than that. So, jnane, next time, jnanena evatu saha api syat. Saha moksha, that gaining moksha, syat, takes place too, due to one thing alone, jnanena eva. It is due to knowledge alone. And here we see Shankara's typical language. He has said, jnana eva moksha. Moksha, liberation, is through knowledge and knowledge alone. What is it that removes that anyadrishti? What will help that lady get her necklace back? Looking outside and looking in her home is useless. And that's exactly what Shankara says in his last line. He says, na karmana. So previously he said, you gain moksha jnanena, through knowledge. And then he says, na karmana, but not by effort. Literally action, but effort would be a nice translation here. So her effort to find her necklace, will that ever be successful? In In fact, Shankara makes an observation here. Virodhatvat. He says, it's actually an obstacle. As long as she's busy looking outside and looking in every room of her home, as long as she's focused out there, it's a distraction. She's looking in the wrong place. As long as she looks in the wrong place, she is prevented from looking in the right place. Is it not so? So her effort is actually an obstacle. And that has an important ramification. Somebody with Anya Drishti, who is committed to finding happiness and contentment through worldly activities, those worldly activities become an obstacle. I won't say that the activities are so much the obstacle as the commitment. When you conclude that you have to do this, you have to do that. That attitude towards worldly life is an obstacle. You have elevated worldly attainments to the ultimate degree, and as long as you have that attitude that worldly goals are the highest, as long as that remains your attitude, that is an obstacle to spiritual growth, for obvious reasons. Okay, so virodhitvat nakarmana. Made a little note here. I think I told this anecdote. I get classes confused. I'm not sure if I told it here or if I told it in the Saturday class or maybe both. I don't know, but I like this metaphor so much. I think you may have heard it. And when you go to my guru's ashram in Pennsylvania to visit, you get off the highway, you're going down the road, and you see to your right the sign saying Arsha Vidya Gurukulam, and you see to the left, I think it's Blue Ridge Flea Market. And on every Sunday morning at 10 o'clock, there's a wonderful Bhagavad Gita class taught at Arsha Vidya Gurukulam. Every Sunday morning, there's this huge flea. I'm told it's the biggest flea market in that part of Pennsylvania. So it draws people from all over. And every Sunday morning, cars are backed up onto the freeway, getting off on this particular road to go down the road. And do you think they turn left or they turn right? And look at the irony. You turn left into the flea market. What do you get? If you've been to a flea, by the way, when I was there as a student, sometimes for entertainment, I would walk across the road and just wander around there to look at the people. I found it fascinating. You know, rural Pennsylvania is a very different world from on the other side of the road. In fact, it's the other side of the road is a little bit like being in India. You go to this side of the world, and you're this side of the road, and you're in rural Pennsylvania. Anyway, nakarmana, by wandering in that flea market. You know that they have these tables arranged in rows. So you go from table to table to table to table. You're looking for perfect peace and contentment. Which table? There are hundreds and hundreds of tables in that flea market. And you go and examine the stuff on not there, and the next table, no, not there. This is an example. And further, and the reason for this metaphor is, as long as you're wandering through that flea market, you are prevented from going across the street to Arshavidya Gurukulam. By the way, there are some Gurukulam attendees who often end up in that flea market. Anyway, it happens. Anyway. So, as long as you're wandering in that flea market, you are prevented from going into the Gurukulam. As long as you are wandering in the mall, as long as you're wandering in this world of earthly pleasures, you are prevented from undertaking this path of spiritual growth. We'll see just a little more. Karma karyastva nityasyat. Karma karyastva nityasyat. Avidya kama karanaha. Avidya kama karanaha. Pramanam veda hevatra. Pramanam veda hevatra. Jnanasad jnanasyadhigame smritaha. Jnanasyadhigame smritaha. Wandering in that flea market, are you going to find anything that is nitya, permanent? Anything that is unborn, uncreated, and therefore eternal time-wise, undecaying, unending? Such a thing doesn't exist in that flea market. Anything, that Shankara says here, is that anything which is karma karyaha, anything that's the result of karma effort, we'll translate it here. Anything that's the result of effort, by definition, too, is anityaha syat, non-eternal. Anything obtained through effort is not eternal. Why can... This isn't said as some kind of dogma, right? These are all logical statements, so maybe we have to make a little effort to understand the logical basis for this statement. Anything obtained through effort is not eternal. There are several ways of answering that. First of all, the obvious way, which we've just discussed, is if you obtain it, you obtain it on a Sunday morning at 10 o'clock. It has a beginning. And anything that has a beginning has an end. You buy something at I can imagine this must happen a lot. You buy something at that flea market, you take it home, your spouse says, "Why are you bringing that junk home? get rid of it." So it seemed valuable to you at the time when you bought it, but that value very quickly disappears when you bring it home. So the point is, anything that's acquired at a point in time has a beginning. Therefore, not eternal by definition. There's another reason that's a little more subtle here. The idea of something with no beginning and end, something that is nitya, eternal. Eternal is a kind of absolute. It's an ultimate condition. And it's free from worldly limitations. So there are many kinds of worldly limitations. One kind of worldly limitation is time. There are other kinds of limitations as well. Suppose we take this eternal as indicative of freedom from all worldly limitations. We're not talking about time, but let's just expand it. That which is free from all worldly limitations. That which is free from all worldly limitations, we have big words for that. We say the absolute, the supreme, the infinite, that which is perfect. And this points to the problem. So you're making an effort, karma karya, anything that is a result of effort. And we've had this discussion here actually fairly recently, where we've pointed out that the amount of effort you expend is proportional to the result. You go wandering through the flea market, not much effort, and what do you get as a result? Not much. You work for 12 years going through a graduate program and getting your PhD, you put in a bigger effort and you get a bigger result. The amount of effort determines the magnitude of the result, or put it the other way around, the result you seek determines the magnitude of effort you have to put in to get it, right? Just common sense. If the result you seek is limitless, absolute, supreme, how much effort should you invest? No amount of effort can culminate in limitlessness. At best, you can approach limitlessness. In mathematics, remember something called an asymptote? You approach closer and closer. You approach that goal. You never quite get there. There's an example in science. If there's a little alcohol dissolved in water, and what you want is pure water, what do? You distill the water. When you distill the water, you get rid of 99% of the alcohol. I don't take that word, is not exact, but it's an idea. So you distill the water and you get rid of 99% of the alcohol. It means 1% is still left. What do? Distill it again. Get rid of 99% of the remaining alcohol. There's still some water left. How many times do you have to distill that water to have pure water with zero alcohol in it? Not one molecule of alcohol. Theoretically, it's impossible. There will always be a trace of alcohol dissolved in that water. That shows that effort cannot culminate in a state of perfection. Now, suppose we apply that to spiritual practice. I have to pick up this last line here. Suppose we apply that to spiritual practice. So you think that, oh, I should do more, if I want to be pure and holy and go to heaven, I should do more rituals. Fine. How many rituals should you do to remain in Swarga Loka permanently, for all time? Well, by this reasoning, you should do an infinite number of rituals. Good luck. A more common problem is someone who, in meditation, how much effort in meditation will it take to gain moksha? Since moksha is a timeless, limitless achievement, it would take an infinite amount of effort in meditation. Besides, whatever you gain in meditation is temporary. Samadhi lasts how long? Bliss lasts how long? And the samadhi and bliss that you might enjoy in meditation are proportional to the amount of effort. More effort, more samadhi. More effort, more bliss. When will you have permanent bliss? When you do an infinite amount, infinite hours of meditation. So you get the idea. This is the limitation of karma. Karma karya. Anything that is a result of karma is limited. Then why are people so fixated on karma? They're This is the end of our class, this last line. Let me introduce it properly. We're supposed to learn from our mistakes, right? You say, as smart people, we learn from our mistakes. Doesn't seem so. Because there's one mistake we make over and over and over again, and that is we work hard for we work hard for contentment, and then the contentment goes away. And we work hard for contentment, and again the contentment goes away. And again we work hard for contentment. You'd think we'd figure it out? Well, you have figured it out. You're sitting here for this class. But in general, people don't figure it out. I forget, it's attributed to Einstein or somebody. I've never used this quote before. The definition of insanity is to do the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result. I think it's attributed to Einstein, but it's not his statement. Anyway, it's a traditional thing that's said. So what's going on here? Shankara answers in the last line. This is avidya kama karanaha. This problem of again and again seeking contentment through worldly activities, failing to get the contentment, not learning your lesson, and trying again and again, that is avidya kama karanaha. That is the result of avidya, ignorance, and not ignorance in general. This is ignorance of your true self. And failing to recognize the true source of contentment within, what arises naturally is kama, desire. And because of that kama desire, you engage in karma effort. This is the trap. The trap is self non-recognition leads to desire for fulfillment, which for most people leads to worldly efforts, which never ever culminate in perfect contentment. For some people, however, they recognize the trick and they recognize the fact. Some people learn from their mistakes. You get it after a while. Just a quick observation. Isn't it true for many, but not most, spiritual seekers that there are one or more events through which you learn that working harder in life isn't enough for perfect contentment? Many people, let me describe my personal experience. I think in my early 20s, so just towards the beginning of my profession. So I got into the computer world at the right place at the right time. And things were going really well in those first few years, enough to figure out that this wasn't going to... I had just worked so hard in school for a number of years to get my degree. Then I went to California, took up his job, and I thought, now I've made it. I think within a year or two, I figured out, this ain't it. It's not enough. It will never be enough. I think many, if not most people, at some point in their life, most spiritual seekers, I have to qualify that, at one point or another in their life, they figure it out. It's not enough. And that's what redirects your attention away from these worldly efforts and towards spiritual growth. Okay, this is a good place to stop because the second half of this verse begins a new topic. So we'll save that topic for next week. Om. Sarve bhavantu sukhinaha, sarve santu niramayaha, sarve bhadrani pashyantu, ma kashchid dukha bhag bhavet, asato ma sadgamaya, tamaso ma jyotirgamaya, mrityorma amritangamaya. Om shanti shanti shanti. Om Tat Sat. All right, this one good, and this one. All right, so we'll continue with our satsang in just a few minutes. I'll come back and join you, and this one.